Gaurabhag Vigraham Vande Gaurangam Gauravaibhavam Gaurasankirtanomatam Gaurakarunyasundaram Guru Rupa Harim Gauram Radha Ruchi Ruchavritam Nityam Naomi Navadvipe Namakirtana Nartanai Srimad Prabhupadam Bhoja Madhupe Bhyo Namo Namaha Nama Shrestam Maramapi Satchiputra Atra Swarupam Rupam Tasya Graja Madhupurim Maturim Gostavatim Radha Kundam Giribarmaho Radhika Maravasam Prapto Jasya Pratita Kripaya Sri Gurun Tanmatosmi. Yes, some question.
Maharaj, question from Bhakti Lata Didi, Moscow. She's asking, in Bhagavad Gita 18:61, Lord Krishna seems to speak about himself in a third person. Why is it so? And there is a
what quote, is that verse?
Ishvarah sarvabhutanam hridayadeshe junatishtati
Brahmayam sarvabhutani yantra rudrani mayaya.
Shall I read translation?
Yeah.
The Supreme Lord is situated and in everyone's heart, O Arjuna, and is directing the wanderings of all living entities who are seated on a machine made of the material energy.
Yes. The Russian word for car is machine, right? So I like that. Yantra, yantram, rudrani maya. Like you can imagine the soul as the passenger in this machine, the body. And the Upanishads and other places, they give similar examples about the body, like the chariot, the five horses are the senses, the mind is the reins, and soul's passenger. But like wild horses, the senses not under control, pulling in inauspicious direction. But here, yeah, Krishna, Ishvara, in one sense it's interesting for Krishna to use the word Ishvara. As many times Srila Prabhupada would point out, it's one of those things. You look through the Bhagavad Gita, it never says Sri Krishna Uvacha. You know, Sri Krishna said. It repeatedly, consistently says, Sri Bhagavan Uvacha. And in this context, Bhagavan meaning the Supreme Lord, the Supreme Ishvara. Like we hear in Brahma Sangita, the very first verse is defining what distinguishes Krishna. And was the very first thing, the word Ishvara is there. But it says, Ishvara Parama Krishna. Satchidananda Vigraha, Nadiradir Govinda, Sarvakarana Karanam. But by saying Ishvara Parama Krishna, another way of saying that is the supreme most conception of God is Krishna. Not Paramatma, not Brahman, not Paramatma. Not even Bhagavan in the general sense, because Bhagavan can mean Narayan of Vaikuntha, Lakshmi Narayan, Sita Ram of Ayodhya. And if we go to Krishna conception, Rukmini and Dwarkanath, Mathuresh, right? Saraswati Thakur wrote in his poetry that Srila Guru Maharaj includes in the Prapanna Jivanamritam, Vrindavan Hoyate Shrestha Govardhana Shaila Gandharvika Giridhari Jata Kridha Koila, showing the gradation that superior to Mathura, the Vrindavan, superior to Vrindavan, Govardhan, superior pastimes there, and Radhakund. And even Gurmar said he differentiated Radhakunda on the Tata, on the banks of Radhakunda, and in the divine waters of Radhakunda. So what this tells us is not only are there gradations of theistic conception, but even within Krishna conception, there is gradation, and it must be understood. So very early on in the Bhagavatam, in the first chapters, which are giving the foundation to properly comprehend Krishna conception, this famous verse is there, Vedanti tat tattva vidas tattvam yajjnanam advayam brahmeti paramatmeti bhagavaniti shabyate. So it's very interesting saying there's only, and when advaya gyan means one thing to know. Everything there will be consistent, not only consistent with what has been expressed in the Upanishads and elsewhere, but is really, as we come to understand, the full-fledged theistic conception of Krishna. Right? Because the Bhagavatam itself saying, Nigama kalpaturo galitambalam shukamukaram ritradavasamyutam pibata bhagavatam rasamalayam muhuraho rasika bhuvi bhavuk bhavuka, that Vedas are like the Kalpaturu, the legendary, mythological, in the true sense, desire tree that fulfills all desires. And saying, but here in the Bhagavat and Vedanta, we're told, is the flower that comes from that tree, like floral essence. We have some experience with that. But when the flower gives way, what comes up? The fruit. So it's saying, Bhagavatam, Nigama Kalpaturo Galitam Palam. It's the fully ripened, mature fruit of the tree of Vedic literature. It's a very interesting statement. It's very comprehensive. Like with any tree, there's one thing, producing that fully ripened, mature fruit that's ready for tasting. But implied is earlier stages or earlier indications do not yield that substance, per se. So then we can understand what's in Veda without expert guidance, Shastra Nipun. We hear of that, of the Nana Shastra Vicharanai Kunipuno, see, Nipun, Kunipun, about the Goswamis. Srila Saraswati Thakur said that about Srila Sridhar Maharaj. Expert at extracting from the scripture the inner meaning, as one could branch off in the wrong direction if they don't understand comprehensively what the goal is. Prayojan tattva means the ultimate conclusion. Prayojan can mean conclusion. It also means fruit, interestingly. So once on the subject of the song of Bhaktivinoda Thakur, where he says that all the Vedas declare that Krishna is the property of Radharani and her girlfriends. He's saying, like, how can he say that? In one sense, it is an outrageous statement. You know, say this, if you look in the Vedas, is that what you're going to come away with? No. Right. What does it say elsewhere? Tri vidyamam soma pa puta papa yajnaya, yuspa, swagatam, prati. Most people go to the Vedas, I mean, who are qualified, and they think, oh, there's a path to heavenly pleasure and heavenly planets that's indicated in here. Missing the essence. So Srila Gurudev responded by saying, he said, the reason that the reason that Bhaktivinod Thakur can say this with such, you know, certainty and authority, he said, is because he has a view of the whole. Meaning, so where, since he knows where this goes, then he can say, this is really what they've been telling you all along. And sometimes they're telling you in a general way, but every general thing in time, it comes to express something very specific. And in that sense, we can think, well, then does that mean that it narrows? In one sense, it does. But then you find out it's narrowed down to the ultimate comprehensive principle. Anandam. Anandam Brahmano Vidvan. So, as Guru Maharaj said, quoting the aphorism, as connotation increases, denotation decreases. And he would remind us that it is the most exclusive plane, but the means adopted to extend that and include others is all inclusive. So it's from this perspective, the anandam, happiness, divine happiness, love, affection, sundaranana, beauty, charm, sweetness. It is the appears from our present position to be the, to occupy the least position, right? So when we hear the Bhagavatam saying, like, so there's this one thing to be understood. What did the Upanishads tell us? You could say almost as a, what comes before, the prequel, right? Saying, Yasmin vigyate sarvam eva vigyatam bhavati. Because you're told, Brahma jigyasa, inquire about spirit. That's a very general statement. Right? Here it's saying, try to know that one thing upon knowing which everything is known. Then we could say, well then tell me. You know, why keep it a secret? Say, well, that one thing to be known, you know, it's infinite. It's very extensive, very comprehensive. So it's true, there's only one thing to be known. But, so the Bhagavatam says, Brahmeti, Paramatmeti, Bhagavan. Three phases. Brahma, Parma. Brahma means, again, as the Upanishads, they're sort of teasing with description. What is it? Anor aniyan mahato mahiyan. It's greater than the greatest, smaller than the smallest. Like, is this a riddle? You know, like the Sphinx has a riddle. And then you have to figure out what the riddle is. So, smaller than the, greater than the greater, smaller than the smallest. You know, right? Brahma, so Brahma, greater than the greatest, all accommodating. And that's, I've said this repeatedly, the way we're conditioned at present and from our present position, we're more comfortable hearing about the extremes of the infinite. And didn't think to ask the question that Guru Maharaj will ask. But so when we hear, greater than the greatest, you know, yeah, that's not like trillion, trillion stars, innumerable universes. We're sending the Voyager and, what do you call it, exploratory, what's the word? You know, spaceships, that's like an old word. But, you know, what do they call those? No, the like explorer and voyager. There's a name for them. So we're trying to see how far they can go. We're getting the one recently, No, the one that showed the rings of Saturn. I'm talking last week, in the last month. I think it was called Voyager. It was sent out like 15 years ago. It finally like went for the center of Saturn, and you know, they're sitting there looking at photographs with Photoshop and stuff, trying to figure out what to do. But anyway, so they're like, and from our present position, it is astonishing. When you see the Hubble telescope showing distant universe, galaxies, it's jaw-dropping, mind-blowing visuals with implications. And when you see how small the Earth is in comparison, I think, oh, so insignificant. The general rule of thumb, a trillion, trillion stars. Right. And so we think, yeah, the vastness of space, like on Star Trek. And they say, space, the final frontier. Even he thinks that's funny. No, that's outer space. Inner space is the direction we need to go in, but we'll come to that. So an outer space. So what can a how can you fit a trillion trillion stars in something? Brahma. It, you know, innumerable universes, all accommodating. And interestingly, as a footnote, sidebar, Brahmavad, the philosophy of, you know, Brahmavad, impersonalism, seems to be the most accommodating. That's why people like it. They think, there's room for everyone in there. Come on, bring the whole gang. You know, all the gods from India, from the west, north, south, east, we can fit everybody in the Brahma conception. Right, including you and I and the whole animation, inanimate, just it all fits within Brahma. But we're told three phases. But then the second phase, Paramatma, would be the next, in one sense, logical assumption that, well, if something is all accommodating, then the other extreme of the infinite would be all permeating or all pervading within everything. And to be within everything, it would, now, what did the Upanishad say? Anoranian mahato mahayan. Anoranian means smaller than the smallest. So greater than the greatest to accommodate all these innumerable universes, but the other extreme of the infinite, smaller than the smallest. So we're generally, we can think like that. Our minds, according to individual capacity, how many universal conceptions one can hold at a time, but generally this type of thought, we're acquainted with it, and we're not put off by it. It makes sense to us. Greater than the greatest, you know, all accommodating and then all permeating. And that's where so Krishna's saying, God, this one aspect of divinity, Ishvara Sarva Bhutanam Hridayeshe Urjuna Tishtati, is in every living being. And basically Krishna, you know, God, like my other self, another face, is in the heart of every living being. So, we think, well, that means the Paramatma. So we might think like, all right, Krishna, he's in Goloka Vrindavan. Does he really know? I mean, Paramatma knows what's going on. You know, we have to really let go of stereotypical thinking, we can just assume that there's a, you know, a direct line of communication there. And it's Krishna, how do you say, in a way that he is accompanying every living being within the heart of every atom, andantarastam paramanu chayantarastam. There it is, param, anu. But it's a way of monitoring everyone as a neutral, passive observer. So mentioned the 13th chapter of the Gita, even in the heart of the cat. Upadrastanu mantacha. The Paramatma said, go to the class. Upadrastanu mantacha. Bharta bhokta maheshwara. Paramatmeti chapyukto. Dehesman purushapana. Then I think it says, as a upadrashta. Drashta meaning to see, observe. Upa, an overseer, observer, means passive, non-interfering. Otherwise, the free will of living beings would be violated. Right? So it's Krishna's way. It's true. He is in Goloka, which again, it's not a question of like GPS or like Goloka's here. And we see paintings like that sometimes. They're useful up to a point. But at a certain point, not. Then we have to hear the descriptions of Mahaprabhu to Sanatana Goswami and Charitamritam and things like that to understand. We're talking about more and more refined planes of consciousness, and not only generic consciousness, but devotionally enriched consciousness with greater and greater degrees of dedication. That's what constitutes the so-called location of within spiritual reality. But still, so Krishna's in that plane, Goloka. And through Paramatma expansion, accompanying everyone. And as a side point, the Purusha avatars, Mahavishnu, Garbhadakshaya Vishnu, Kiradakshaya Vishnu. Sometimes there's some level of equating Kiradakshaya Vishnu and Paramatma because it's moving in that direction. But so Krishna can say that the Ishvara, he's the Parameshwara, the not only Bhagavan, but the Swayam Bhagavan. But Swayam Bhagavan can say, and this Ishvara, Paramatma, that's how I am situated within everyone. But still, as we told, Brahma, Brahma, all-accommodating Brahma, all-permeating Paramatma. And Guru Maharaj, when he says these things, it sounds so simple. And really, it sounds like he's expressing what we would have expressed if we had the capacity to do so. He's saying, then if these are the extremes of the infinite, then what would be the central conception? The golden mean. Right? What all accommodating, all permeating, what would be the central conception? All attractive. Karshan, akarshan, Krishna. Krish means to attract to the center. We understand this attraction more readily in terms of like gravity, gravitational pull. But there's also the gravitational pull in the sense of like charm, charisma, beauty, being seduced by the beauty, charm, and sweetness, right, of Swayam Bhagavan, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The central conception of the infinite is the personality of the infinite. Can we conceive of such a thing? That the infinite, not only has the capacity for the full spectral range of sensuousness, and not limited to eros, but including that. I mean, seeing, hearing, tasting, touching, smelling, feeling, thinking, feeling, emotions. This is mind-blowing to conceive, that the central conception of the infinite possesses personality. It's like the personality of the infinite. Otherwise, it seems, I don't even know if the word foolish suffices to think we alone have this sort of capacity, right, as human beings. All these things we can do, all the subtlety we can convey just with our facial expression. Like, what is the dance in South India where they have the Kathakali? You've seen?
Yeah.
And they spend years maybe working on the face. They don't do a lot of dance movement. Their emphasis is on the face and expression. The eyebrow, I mean, and you can see on the internet, they'll tell you all these different parts of the face, and they practice expressing emotions. Right? We know that Ramananda and Mahaprabhu's pastimes was training the Devdasis how to express ecstatic emotions. What would be the gestures, the movements that accompany that? So we value these things here. Right? And taste. Right? Our friend Nietzsche, he said, this, who can deny it? The world is about tasting and taste and, you know, a comparative analysis of that. I was happy to read that. He always says something that the goddess Saraswati perhaps is making him say. Like he said, he's famous as an atheist, but he said, I could only believe in a god if he was a good dancer. Who is Krishna? Vrindavana Notoboro. He's the dancing reality. So inadvertently he's saying, I could believe in Krishna because he's an excellent dancer. But anyway, when I say, about tasting. Oh, when I was flying from Brazil back to America from Sao Paulo to New York, and sitting next to me was a man who worked for the Wrigley Chewing Gum Company. And so we started, we're getting to know each other, talking about, and he said, I'm a taste scientist. And I said, so am I. And what was interesting is he said, he had samples with him. He said, we're working on combining things that are not normally compatible. And they now have this gum in Thailand. It has a 5 on it. Comes in a special case. Those are the ones he was working on. They combine like mint and watermelon, or things that you would not normally think are compatible. And I said, well, this is very interesting, because Rupa Goswami, he deals with Rasa Bas in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. He's the expert on taste. And he's saying, there's certain types of Rasa Bas that are acceptable. Generally not, but he's saying, there are certain instances where things that appear to be incompatible can be compatible, and in that sense, palatable or tasteful. So our lives center around taste, seeking taste, and expressing taste, down to like not only what we eat, but you know, we listen to certain types of music, we wear certain clothes, we present ourselves in a certain way. If someone does this very nicely, they will say, at least in English, they do, and they say like, oh, he or she has good taste. So, and that's a subjective thing. Someone else can say, well, I don't care for that. But, so this taste idea, the central conception of the absolute, Swayam Bhagavan, the personality of Godhead, we're told, raso vaisa, he's very tasteful. And all the ways that you can understand that, meaning he himself is tasteful, what he does is tastefully done. In the Gita, Krishna is giving some hint. Rasoham apsukonteya prabhasmi shashishuryayo. I'm the taste of rasoham apsu. I'm the taste of water and all liquids, you can say. Right? Rasoham apsukonteya prabhasmi shashishuryayo. He said, I'm the light of the sun. I'm the light of the moon. Pranava sarva vedeshu, I'm the syllable om in all the Vedic mantras. Pranava sarva vedeshu, shabda ke purusham rishu. Shabda ke, I'm the sound, and all sound you can hear, I'm that. He's everything. Remember it said, advaya gyan, there's only one thing to be known. You think, well, what about this stuff? Is this God too? Well, where else did it come from? There's some way that Brahma, spirit, which is the least of his aspect, is transformed into these substances. And that's described in great detail in the Srimad Bhagavatam, particularly second canto, maybe third canto, how this all transpires. So they say he cannot directly interact with Maya for generating universes and worlds. So what are we told? The Purusha avatar Mahavishnu lying in the causal ocean, right? Innumerable universes emanating from his pores like golden eggs, expanding to a billion by a billion, whatever your metric. And what does he do? We're told he's lying in yoga nidra with his eyes half closed. So like in a half asleep state, and not even directly looks at Maya, but we're told from the periphery of his vision, just a side glance. And the side glance personifies as Shambhu Shiva, who is, you know, Mayinam tu Maheshwaram, Mayam Prakritim Bidyam, Mayinam tu Maheshwaram, who is her Lord. He's the master of Maya. And then Shiva impregnates. He's sometimes described as the sum total of all the jivas. He impregnates all the jivas into Prakriti. And that's described in the beginning of the Brahma Sangita. So, whereas he himself, so all of this does come from him as well, but he himself, raso vaisa, he's full of rasa, taste. Anandam Brahmano Vidvan, what else? Sachidananda Vigraha. So when we understand Krishna's position and what to speak of Paramatma, Vishnu, he's superior to Vishnu, Narayan of Vaikuntha, and Ramachandra of Ayodhya. Even Dwarka Krishna is charmed by Vrindavan Krishna. But what does it say, the verse? Sarva Adbhuta Samatkara Lila Karo Labhidharani Tuni Madhura Prema Mandala Vin Karsi Madhurja, his Lila Madhurja, Venu Madhurja, Rupa Madhurja. His sweetness personified. Paramatma is not described in that way. So, in fact, Krishna can speak of the Lord of the Ishvara as Paramatma in this way, and it appears that he's speaking in the third person. Any other question?
Srila Sridhar Maharaj says that when you get even a glimpse of your soul, you'll be astonished.
He's quoting the Bhagavad Gita.
In search for Sri Krishna,
It
is compared to the treasure under your own house, which you should approach through bhakti. So what does one have to do to see his soul?
Well, it's not just like have a glimpse of your soul and leave it at that, or then tell everybody about it on Facebook. saying, Ascharja bhat pastati kastidenam. He's saying, it means to have a glimpse of your soul, means a glimpse of what your potential is, your reality potential, of your identity and reality. Muktir hetvanyata rupam swaropena vivastiti. When the acquired prejudice, acquired tendency, the coverings, right? Jnana karma dhyanavritam. The layers of karma and jnana, right now, they're covering the soul, and we're identifying with that as ourself. So the humanist thing, yeah, and that's wonderful, and you should just accept the way you are. You know, learning to love yourself is the greatest love of all. What, you're covered? Yourself that's covered an acquired tendency and acquired prejudice that's concealing your actual identity? How's that going to end? So discovery is required. Sarvupadi vinirmuktam tatparatena nirmalam Rishikena Rishikesha Sevanam Bhakti Ruchite. Upadi can mean rank, designation. But I found an interesting, looking in the Sanskrit dictionary, just like to look at the words from time to time. It said substitute. And I thought, that's what we're always doing, substitute identities for the actual identity, whether it be gender-based, socio-economic, political, historic, living at a particular time, national identity. Saying that your spirit, that's like generic national, generic spiritual, it's like spiritual nationalism. Ahang Brahmasmi, I'm spirit in a general sense, without any specifics. So substitute identities based upon the self and extended selfishness. So sarvapati vinirmuktam tatpara nirmal, that has to be cleansed. Then Hrishikena Hrishikesha Sevanam Bhakti Ruchate. And now we're back to the point also that Krishna, he's Hrishika Isha. Hrishika, that means the senses. If Krishna had no senses, was senseless, doing devotional activities would make no sense whatsoever. That's why doing things mindlessly doesn't yield the substantial thing. And this is a very beautiful thing. That Krishna has senses gives meaning to our senses. If Krishna was senseless, then we would be like insects. Right? But that he has senses means then he can appreciate when you offer something to him. The aroma, the fragrance, the taste again, the presentation. Like why we met, when I put these flowers to the Guru Varga every day, I thought, it matters how you put them. You would care, if it was someone you loved, you would make them look nice. And, you know, it's one thing, of course, sometimes we're tossing flowers too, don't get me wrong. But I remember Avadhut Maharaj and I, in Puri, we were brought to this one deity, Madan Mohan, who had some, you may know, and Mr. Shao, Amiya Kishore Prabhu, who just had a birthday. That connect with Raghunath Das Goswami, Sanatana, etc. But this deity was the only deity in Puri that they don't bring Jagannath Prasad there, they bring bhog from Jagannath for this deity. It's the only one. And there's a long backstory from the Saptarshis, you know, millions of yugas and kind of thing. But they bring bhog of Jagannath every day for that deity, the pandas from the temple. But the place we visited was dilapidated, right? You know, just looked like it had been bombed, just rubble. But in this one little room, there was like the Madan Mohan Vigraha, and what impressed me so was how beautiful the flowers were by whoever was taking care of that deity. Very beautifully they were making flower garlands and offering to them. It was just stunning how beautiful it was. It told you, by what you saw, it said there is devotion here within this. Within this arena, there's devotion in the background. It must be. So Hrishikena Hrishikesha, Hrishikesha Sevanam, can serve Krishna. It sounds so simple, but it's so glorious and beautiful. With your senses, with your hearing ability, seeing, touching, tasting, voice, everything, you can serve Krishna because Krishna, he's not only possesses senses himself, but he is the he personifies or epitomizes sense expression for each sense. If he's what your senses could hope to see beyond your senses' wildest dreams, to have the sensual encounter with Krishna. And we're told that's possible, but only when these layers have to be removed. And we can understand that happens gradually. It's a cumulative effect of spiritual practice and sadhana bhakti. As Guru Maharaj said, with regard to Srila Saraswati Thakur, on the Brajamandal Parikrama, when Guru Maharaj indicated some special appreciation for Kadam Kandi, the place of Rupa Goswami. And then a couple years later, they're on the same parikrama, and when they come to Kadam Kandi, Srila Saraswati Thakur says, "Your place." And Guru Maharaj thought, "What?" He said, "Your place." And then Guru Maharaj said, "Oh." He said, "Our Guru Maharaj was engaged in Ruchi Pariksha." Like we know, Pariksha means to examine. Ruchi. He was examining the taste of his advanced disciples, we can say. And Guru Maharaj said, because at a certain stage of spiritual progress, these layers, they start vanishing. So you understand, that means as the layers of karma and jnana are vanishing, that means the swaroop of the aspiring servitor is coming into view, it's becoming visible, can be detected. So why did I say that? What question am I answering?
The question was referring to.
Always keep the question at hand.
What does one have to do to
see? Oh, to see the self. Yeah. Well, I think I just described that. But what he's saying, when you have a glimpse of your soul, means, what does that mean? What is your soul? It means the servitor identity. What does that mean? Your reality potential. As Guru Maharaj sometimes would say, he's like summarizing and putting in a succinct form. He's saying, one thing we learn from Einstein is reality is a thing plus its potential. So I like to call that reality potential. Otherwise, like, just to give an example, we have these lights here, the microphones. If the microphone is not picking up sound and transmitting that, it hasn't realized its identity, right? Then it's just like a wire with a little knob on the, you know, same stuff is there, but it's meant to do this. Right? So you can say its reality potential is to do that. When it's not doing that, it's not realizing its reality potential. Like when you put it in the box and it's asleep. Right? You put the equipment away and it's sleeping. I mean, its potential is dormant. But then when we set it up and put the current in, then the microphone's doing that, the light is giving illumination, the cameras are transmitting the audio and the video, all of that. So that's what I mean to say, that's its reality potential. When it's in a dormant condition, like a sleeping-like stage, and to a certain degree, it's not real. That can either be scary or a great relief to hear. Because sometimes you think, well, this is the only self I know. I'm afraid of getting lost and, you know, in the spiritual reality. Or if we say, I'm relieved to know that this ultimately is not me. that I'm underneath there, buried underneath, expressing things in a perverse way. And Bhagavad Gita, Srila Prabhupada says in one place, he says our natural love for Krishna is being expressed in a perverted way as lust for matter. So it's that thing that's driving, like the Dylan Thomas poem, where he said, what does it say? Does not the same force that drives the green fuse drive my age? He's saying that he's on a Brahman level saying, isn't that what's, you know, that's making the flower grow and it opens up and it does its expression too, right? Those flowers and the pistil and stamen and all this stuff. He's saying, isn't that the same thing that's in me? That's right, in a generic sense. But when we want to get at the core of identity, going to the deep heart's core, the swaroop, then these other layers covering have to be uncovered. And what Guru Maharaj is saying, so when you have a glimpse of your reality potential, means including in the upper world, that's what, when we hear or read Chaitanya Charitamrita or Krishna Lila, the pastimes of Krishna, sometimes the inspiration may be awakened in us if we're fully immersed, absorbed in those pastimes, and realize to a certain degree, by divine grace descended, there's a level of participation. That's why Kaviraj Goswami is taking the dust from the feet of his readers, because he knows what this substance is, and he knows that it's reality, it's living, dynamic, it's real, it's not a story. It may take the shape of a story, a pastime. It's reality. It's live streaming reality. And so he's saying to the readers of this book, knowing what that is and that plane, and that that plane is there and it's extending itself in the form of these divine descriptions through the medium of transcendental sound, he's saying, I take the dust from the feet of my readers. He's saying, if anyone actually appreciates this, that means they must be a devotee. And not only a devotee, but ultimately a devotee of higher order. It's really peculiar the way he expresses it. He's taking the dust from the feet of his readers. We think, no, you're the author. He's saying, no, this is some divine substance passing through me by the grace of Madan Mohan, Madan Gopal, and Rupanuga Guru Varga. But if the people reading this faithfully and appreciating that and entering into the spirit of that, it's the beginning of their participation. It's the beginning of having a glimpse of one's reality potential, which we're told is what? Ascharja means amazing, astonishing. From day one that we come in connection with Krishna consciousness, express any appreciation on any level, it's directed toward an alternate concept of self and identity. So, when Srila Gurudev would say sometimes, like after one of these amazing talks of Srila Guru Maharaj, and he would say in a very like affectionate and like wistful, and he'd say, you can't imagine how bright your future is. Because he knows, now you've come into Guru Maharaj's zone, and under Srila Gurudev's guidance, service to Srila Guru Maharaj, which will keep you in that zone and take you deeper into that zone. And say, you can't imagine how bright your future is. He's talking about that reality potential. He's have a glimpse of your identity and the soul plane, the upper world. Anything else?
There is one more question.
All right.
From Gupta Govardhan. Even when you try to sacrifice yourself, so much disturbance comes from observing yourself and estimating how much you've sacrificed. How to become self-oblivious?
Self-oblivious? Self-oblivion should be the natural outcome of being absorbed in the other. And I say that with the capital O. And by other, I mean, Guru Vaishnav, Sadhu Shastra Guru Vaishnav, Mahaprabhu, Radha Govinda. So much absorbed in the other that, because we're making a distinction here between self-oblivion and self-extinction. Self-oblivion just means to be lost in another, so lost in them, but without losing your actual identity, but so given over to the other. So it means through being absorbed in service, then we will feel that and experience that. Like we hear of, you know, immersion, immersive experience. Someone goes to a movie and, you know, some people will say, they'll say, well, for 2 hours, people just want to forget the world they live in and go to some other place. Like, that's why they don't want to see a movie that's too much like the world they live in. So they want to go see some, that's why fantasy or sci-fi or some, just to see some, to lose themselves. That's self-aware. You're lost, totally immersed in another realm, in another zone. So we can do that in a movie theater, right? Or in a 3D dome, totally immersive experience. So then think about the pastimes of Krishna, of Mahaprabhu, and what we hear from Guru and Vaishnava. When we're hearing faithfully, and by their grace, their mercy, we can become lost in that, self-oblivious. And also in the throes of intense service, of fully absorbing oneself in one's service. As Guru Maharaj mentions in his Gayatri explanation, the Bhagavatam also, you know, satyam param dhimahi, meditate on that supreme absolute truth. He's saying, but dhimahi has the word D-H-I-D. He said, like buddhi, intelligence. He said, well, it doesn't mean abstract meditation. It means using your intelligence how to serve. And when that is intense and comprehensive, can be to a degree of self-oblivion in the positive sense. Totally lost in one's service. As we say, Yashoda, this is the month of Damodar. What does it say? Yashoda bio luka la davamanam param vrishtam atyantato dhrutya gopya. What are the lines before that? Ruda, huh? Ananda Rupam, Satkundalam, Golokule Rajamanam, Yashoda Bio Luka. Tato Drutya Gopya. So Yashoda, she's breastfeeding Krishna. And I mean, this is inconceivable. I'm talking about self-oblivion. She's breastfeeding Krishna, but she's cooking milk on the stove and it starts to boil over. And she pushes Krishna off her breast and goes and tends to the milk. She has the Param Brahma crawling on her lap and goes and sets him down to go tend to the milk. What plane is she in? What zone is Yashoda in? Yashoda ba Mahabhaga Papo Yasya Tanam Hari, Nanda Kim Akarod Brahman, Shreya Eva Mahodayam. Nanda Maharaj has Krishna crawling in his courtyard, but Yashoda Ba Mahabhaga, her fortune is even greater. He's crawling on her, crawling in Nanda's courtyard, but literally crawling on Yashoda. And drinking her breast milk. That causes Priyamani. What sort of good fortune do they have? So Raghupati Upadhyaya told Mahaprabhu, everyone's searching for the Param Brahma. What do? They've captured him wholesale. And what captures? And who can be entrusted with the infinite on their lap? Someone who's perpetually in self-oblivion. She's so wholly given over to Krishna. So in the sense of purpose and oneness, there's no distinction. Yet they are two distinct identities. So it's a profound subject matter. Hare Krishna. Hari Hari Namo Krishna Yadavaya Namaha.